Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Hine. Welcome to the Return to Service podcast. Today, we're going to be talking with Andy Yanka. He's the Vice President of Aircraft Services at Access Aviation Group and Moyer Aviation. We're talking about EBIS today. I didn't have him on because I want to talk about EBIS. I wanted to have him on because he's been awesome to work with, and I really appreciate his approach to how he not only rolled this out, but also how he assessed the different vendors, how he went about assessing his own operation, how he looked at the ways that he could implement this with minimal disruption. So we talk through all of that. And I really enjoyed this because we got to dive into a little bit of his background and how he's rolled out other like enterprise level systems like this, the lessons that he learned there, how he changed the approach slightly for this. And I wanted to share this with you guys because, look, as all these companies grow and there's acquisitions, or you want to move into the next phase of your company and you want to attract even younger talent to join your team, the change in technology is inevitable. You're not going to get away with paper forever. It's not going that way. We have technician shortages. We have high turnover rates. All of these things that create tons of inefficiencies. If you had disparate systems in your operation, you're probably, I don't want to overstate this, but there's at least three extra jobs that you'd probably need to hire somebody to do that manually if you wanted it to be efficient, versus if you implement the technology side, you can circumvent a lot of these issues. You can make the jobs easier for the technicians and let them actually focus on the things that they need to do in order to turn wrenches and get these planes turned in and out. So that's why I wanted to have him on here, is talk through this, have that perspective of somebody who's done it successfully, and see that, yes, although it's a big deal, you can do things to mitigate that process and make it less risky, more likely to be implemented from your team, and more likely to actually solve problems in your operation. So in addition to this, check out the link in the show notes below. We put together a few resources, and I recommend approaching them in this kind of order. We put together this maintenance efficiency assessment. It's a handful of questions. It'll probably take you 10, 15 minutes. Go through, fill out the questions. It's going to ask you questions about your operation, how you process work orders, parts management, invoicing and billing, because these are the areas where we see a lot of people run into issues. They have duplicate data entry, disjointed systems that don't talk, and then it creates downstream effects that ultimately increase the time between when you finish maintenance and when you send an invoice out, or your accounts receivable start going up, or the time it takes you to generate a report, either it's weeks or somebody just says, like, how important is this report to you? So it gives you the ability to start asking questions, assess your own operation, and find the areas where you can actually increase the efficiency. And then from there, we also have a webinar that dives in even deeper. And so we took the learnings from what I've been talking with Andy about. He's been awesome to work with, and he's given us a ton of great insight into the operations. And we had similar conversations with, at this point, about 20 different MROs in terms of what challenges they were dealing with, how they're implementing this stuff. They implemented the first version of EBIS. Okay, we went through, we got that humming, but now we want to take it to the next level and we're not really sure where to go. Can you help us? And that's where all of this information that comes from the assessment and the webinar, a lot of that stems from there. So go check it out. If this is something that you're considering in your operation, if you're looking to improve and make things more efficient, at the very least, start by identifying the areas where you have inefficiencies and then take it from there. All right, without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Andy Yanka from Access Aviation Group. All right, Andy, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
So I wanted to have you on here. You and I had a call probably about a month ago, and you shared some insights on how you rolled the system out. And so I wanted to be able to share with the audience kind of the way that you approached implementing a digital solution, a software, kind of how you looked at it before you did the implementation, how you assessed things. And then when you rolled it out, you had a lot of interesting points on the phased approach and what I almost call a digital toolbox and the types of tools that you gave to your technicians to support them. So I want to dive into all that. But real quick, if you can, give a quick background on yourself and a little bit about Moyer.
Yeah, so I'm the vice president of aircraft services for the Access Group, which is the owner of Moyer Aviation and Access Air. I'm relatively new to the aviation industry, lifelong interest in aviation, but the education, engineering, and spent a lot of time in various aspects of business, starting out as a manufacturing engineer, and I was in new product development, project engineering, sourcing, and then into some executive roles in product management and marketing. And all along, loved aviation on the side, and then had some good luck career-wise, and was able to take some time and figure out a way to merge my passion with a career, and met the folks with the Access Group at Moyer Aviation, and I was able to bring some of the business experience and wisdom and background to the business to help to grow the business and improve the service to our customers. So I've been with Moyer formally, Access Group formally, for since February. I started in a consulting role about a year ago, actually evaluating ERP software. So the ownership group recognized the need, and I came on board and evaluated all the software, made some recommendations. And then when I came on formally and earlier this year, that was my first big project, was to implement the software.
Got it. Okay. And so you had experience implementing this type of software before. What were some of the different like ERP type softwares that you rolled out in the past? Yeah.
So I've been involved with, the most recent was the Oracle NetSuite software. We rolled that ERP out at the last company I was with. We were a private equity backed startup essentially, and we launched that to run the business. I've been involved with Oracle, other Oracle software, SAP, one called E21. There's others that I can't remember, but I've been involved with a number of them, rolled out a handful, and so that I was able to bring that experience to Moyer to help them evaluate tools to improve the efficiency of the business.
So how did you take what you learned from those past experiences? Like, how did that start to shape how you assessed what you guys were doing and how you guys, you know, look at it? How did you take that and start applying it to this situation?
Yeah, well, I had the visibility and the experience with the other ERP software, some of the market leaders with SAP and others, to know what they could do. And, the folks at in our business, they've great people, have been running a very successful business for many years, but didn't have the exposure to ERP systems. So I was able, by having exposure and knowing what the systems, electronic tools are capable of doing, that allowed me to come into the business, evaluate different parts of our maintenance business, the processes that were in place, mostly manual and on paper, and identify where we could automate processes, where we could improve data, where we could reduce waste within the organization. And after I evaluated call it a value stream map, not a true value stream map in the sense of the word, but kind of mapped out all the processes, that the manual processes that the business did, and then layered that over the aviation-specific softwares that were in the marketplace, to see which ones align the best with the ability, which would have the best ability to essentially automate those processes and bring those efficiencies.
So I want to explore two aspects of this. I want to explore the tactical aspects too, but I also want to look at kind of the end that you had in mind, if you will. So which would you prefer to start with? Do you want to start with the high level or the tactical?
Yeah, by the end. Let's look at the end. I think it would be a better place to start, because that's what informed a lot of our decision-making in terms of the software, is the vision of the business. So the Access Group, the holding company for Moyer Aviation and Access Air, You know, we have some long-range strategic goals about growing in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic and Midwest and then beyond eventually. And you know, part of that growth is growing our maintenance operation. And we're looking at ways we could bring some efficiency. We knew the ownership group and myself, we recognized the need for electronic tools. And we wanted to build a foundation that could then be scalable as we grew, as we opened up other satellite maintenance facilities, acquired other facilities, hopefully in the future when the time is right. We can take a foundation that we built in did all the troubleshooting and worked out all the bugs and made running, got running really well at Moyer, and drop that into these other locations and other businesses. So make that investment up front with the foundation and then be able to take that, those electronic tools, and very quickly wring the efficiencies out of those organizations that we're doing at Moyer right now. So that was the long range. That's the long range vision, the plan, and the underlying kind of goals with long range goals with the ERP system or the electronic systems for the work orders and running the maintenance.
Okay. So on that front, it was basically, hey, we're going to take a look at where we are now, where we're trying to take the company in the next, call it 5 years for just a arbitrary date. But here's the aspects of the business that we know are going to play a critical role. And then here are we at least know from a high level that the digital tools are going to be what allows us to make this more efficient. But ultimately it was, hey, we want to scale. We want to do these kind of things. So we need to get this stuff right now in the shorter term. So let's get it right. Let's get this humming. And then when we're ready, when the time is right, we already have this piece of the puzzle figured out, at least. And we'll be able to solve for 80% of whatever we're going to run into in the next phase, pretty much right off the bat.
Exactly. You summed up the vision very well.
Okay. All right. Cool. And so once you had that vision and you knew this was the direction that you needed to go, what was the process of mapping things out like? Was the next step to map it out, or was there another step in between?
When you say map it out, we mapped out our internal processes very early. You know, that was almost in parallel with the vision building activities. So having mapped out the processes, I knew based on that map, what we want, what tools we need, what problems we're trying to solve with electronic tools.
Yep.
And then it was evaluating the tools over in the marketplace. So, there's many options in the aviation maintenance MRO space. And it literally, we spent 6 months evaluating all of those, which is probably longer than I would have liked. But because it was so new to the organization and it was so important to build for that foundation that I talked about, having that foundation right, we were very thorough in our evaluation and making sure that it was going to be the right tool that solved all of the needs, all the problems, and ultimately would be embraced by the organization. And that was a big piece of it in terms of being embraced by the organization. There's a lot of tools. There's one other tool that me as the engineer in me and the data nerd in me, there's another tool that I liked better personally, but the user interface was not great, and I was confident that that would not gain traction because user interface would be too complicated and the folks running the tool would be discouraged because it wasn't intuitive, wasn't easy to learn. So that was sort of the
trade-off, if you will.
Yeah, we're weighing that as a factor that we gave up a little bit of functionality that I wanted from business intelligence, business decision making, because the value of having that was less than the value of good adoption by the team.
And so team adoption is something that is critical. I've seen it with rolling out software in previous aviation life and then also in the marine space too, making sure that user interface is actually going to get adopted. It's a critical piece, but that's not an intuitive thing to everybody. How did you know that that was a factor that was at play?
Well, when you looked at the tools that the organization was using, we had a parts management software that was custom built in DOS in the 80s. And that was the only real electronic tool other than a spreadsheet for invoicing that the organization was using. So they had very little exposure. So, and, you know, every time you do, you know, you change something, you do something different, there's the human nature is to resist a little bit, some sure. more than others. So it was much of a feel kind of, you know, my experience in being in executive roles and in management roles throughout my career, I had a pretty good sense and intuition that there would likely be some resistance and likely be some difficulty with adoption if the tools weren't easy to use. That's for me where it came up. So that, you know, the watch out for somebody else that was doing it is to really look at what your staff is comfortable with today, what kind of tools are using. If they're similar, probably not an issue. If they're wildly different, like what we did with the rolling out the EBIS at Moyer, it's likely to be more pitfalls you could fall in terms of the rolling out and adoption and embracing the new tools.
So, and for that's a critical piece because as good as the tool could be, or, you know, I like tooting the EBIS horn, but it's still a lot of change. Like, so that's a pretty big bridge to gap. So what are some of the things that you looked at during that implementation process that would help mitigate some of that change or keep it compartmentalized so that it wasn't like destabilizing?
Yeah. And I don't know if you're familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk, the
yep.
AR. So, you know, he has a term give, ask, you know, and that was an approach that I took is that as I rolled out the software to the organization, we gave people, you know, highlighted how it was going to improve their lives, how it was going to make their lives better, make them more efficient, reduce risk, whatever those things were, went and found those. And I think we'd like to talk about it a little bit more later, but phasing the rollout, I phased in parts of the software that would give an immediate benefit to the staff without upsetting the apple cart, you know, give them a tool that, well, in my case, a tool to create a purchase order, which they never had before. So we made a very easy tool. Then the next one was then we got rid of that DOS software and implemented the parts management. And all of a sudden we had great visibility to parts that we didn't have before and data, and gave them that, highlighted the data, showed them, here's the data you'll get. And ultimately it was the last piece where the ask was, okay, now we're going to stop using some of the paper tools that you're using. You're going to use the software. And so that was an approach that I used that a little softer maybe than most. You know, my personal nature is to just come and say, okay, today we're doing this. You know, I'm a agent of change by personality and embrace it. And that's something else I've learned throughout my career is that you meet folks where they are, you know, give them something, give them a reason to get interested in the tool, give them a reason to get excited about the tool, and don't use the carrot instead of the stick, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and so, all right, you have this give, ask approach. Do you feel like that made it, what impact did that have when you actually asked for some change? Was it easier to navigate through because, you know, and why?
Yeah. Well, being new, you know, I there needed to be some trust built with the organization, with the staff. And by giving them some things, that helped me gain that trust. And then when it came time to ask, say, hey, okay, guys, today we're going to, or actually it was, the meeting was Monday, we're going to start using this to track work orders. And it reduced a lot of the anxiety by showing them that over time, I rolled out the software, gave them some tools ahead of time that were beneficial. So when the time came to actually make a big change to the guys who were gals are going to be using the software primarily, they were much more amenable to embracing it and giving it a shot. And that was a lot of the words, you know, I said, guys, I knew deep down that once they used it, it would work, but it was guys, give it a shot, try it out. And trust me on this, but by giving, I built that trust and there was some trepidation. There was some anxiety. There was some doubt, but they gave it a shot. And here we are with it working very well.
And what were those hesitations? Because I've seen it in a few different ways that you know, if you're trying to make a change, sometimes you might feel like, oh, that's silly to worry about. But when you actually talk to people and understand where they're coming from, sometimes it's, I don't like computers because I don't really know how to use them. Or it could even be something as much as, hey, my license is tied to me verifying that this is correct. And I don't fully understand the digital process. So I don't really feel comfortable putting my name, my literally kind of like my life or livelihood in jeopardy because I did something that I didn't really understand. So what were some of the kind of like resistances you saw?
Oh, those were the two. You guessed them. It was, you know, unease with the IT, with the computer, electric records keeping. So since the 30 years plus of life of the organization, records were all paper. And the organization, the staff, they knew that if they needed to look up a work order, they could go to a filing cabinet, open it up, and it would be right there. And having not used a lot of technology tools, a lot of the computer, electronic, paperless tools, there was some anxiety about where will I find that information, which then it was important because being a 135 operator, we have processes, you know, we have SOPs that we have to follow. And this, well, it lines right up with the SOPs. There was some unease about, well, how do I have to change my own personal processes to make sure that we're compliant, you know, make sure that we're maintaining aircrafts properly, make sure the record keeping is right and that we're not missing things. So those were the kind of, I think, the underlying causes of anxiety in the organization was that, you know, our team takes great pride in maintaining aircraft very well. They take great pride in being compliant with the regulations and making sure FAA visits are a non-events, which they are in our organization. And there was some anxiety about, okay, how can I continue to, you know, bring that high quality of work with a tool that I'm not familiar with? So those were the challenges we had.
And it's a good challenge with people having that kind of mindset is like, how do I deliver the same level of like excellence with these new tools?
Right. Right. Yeah. And especially when you've been doing it a certain way successfully for 30 years and here comes this new guy and says, oh no, you're going to be doing it very differently. You know, that's tough.
Yeah.
And being very conscious of that. And some of the approaches I did it is as I rolled the software out, the areas that impacted the compliance, for instance, we ran both processes in parallel. We did our old paper process, and then in the background, I was personally running electronic process in parallel, matching them up and following through. And that helped me to understand our processes better. That helped me configure properly the software so that it would work. So, and when I was all done, I could say, see, here's the paper. Here's the information you have on paper, here's the electronic information. See, they match. And that helps.
So you were able to follow that process along. One, it's helpful to you because you have a better understanding of what they were doing. But two, what it also does is actually shows the team that's doing that process. It gives them like a visual that says, hey, one for one, we've matched the paper process, at least as much as you can match it. Here's where these things both line up. This is how you do it on paper. This is where it's at in the computer. And even some instances, I know it also came down to here's where you can print this out we'll print this out for you for some of it. But so do you feel like creating that visual was an important piece?
For our organization, it was very important to do that. In that the visual, the parallel processes to prove to the skeptics in the organization that they're not going to be hung out. They're going to have the compliance data they need. It's going to be easy to access. It'll be secure. By doing the parallel rollout allowed me to gain their trust and prove to them that the new tools will do what we expect them to do.
Yeah. Okay. And all right. So overall, it was going through. It was mapping out the processes. Actually shadowing along with those processes to make sure that you can match them. Another key aspect you mentioned was if you're going to do this in a phased approach, you could you could kind of rip the Band-Aid off and go with the main thing. But in order, because it was such a decent sized gap between where you were and where you wanted to go technology wise, you started with smaller things that wouldn't necessarily have a huge impact on the day to day for everybody. So you could start with POs, you could start with parts. And by doing that, you kind of build the trust, you build familiarity with it. There's like some small wins along the way. And then when it comes time to make the big change, you've already got all this stuff in place. So the leap of faith doesn't feel like I'm diving off a cliff into clouds. I could see the water below. So I know how far I'm diving.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, what I found was unique with this rollout was I was able to phase it in. Other ERP implementations, especially when you're changing from one ERP system to another, we had the benefit of doing a lot of paper processes that weren't linked tightly. But, you know, when you are switching, you have to rip the Band-Aid off. And, you know, my experience is that, you know, you do the transition over a weekend and Monday morning, boy, you hope that you hope it works. And
you're on standby for 48 hours.
You spend the next 2 weeks triaging the new ERP software. And by phasing it out, there was no triage. We were able to find areas where the configuration wasn't quite right without impacting the business, which was a really neat aspect of the software from my standpoint, having been involved with a number of ERP implementations.
Okay, got it. And actually, what brings up a point I want to ask you about. So you have these things go live, right? I would imagine it wasn't like, okay, this is live, good luck. How did you, when you went live, how did you support the team? How did you did you communicate to them like, hey, I'm available for questions? Like, how did you make it so they had the support that they needed once it went live?
Well, it's probably, I don't know how easily this would be, how replicable what I did would be for other organizations, but if you could do it, I think it was great. I built a desk on wheels with monitors and a printer and an uninterruptible power supply, and I parked myself in the middle of the shop. I physically was right in the middle, and if I was in the way, I'd roll the desk out of the way of the airplane so they could shout, the technicians could shout, hey, I need help with this, or can you do that? And so just being there present physically and working with them, because I had been essentially running the software in the background, kind of unbeknownst to them, for a while. So I was prepared. It's just a matter of telling them, hey, just shout, just say something if you have a question. And so by being there present physically for the first week or two, that helped. I also had a couple of folks in the organization came along with me in the implementation process. Our parts manager, who's a wizard with the computers, and we had one other lady in the organization that were aware of the software. Thanks to our parts manager, he was part of the early rollout. We rolled out parts first, so he was using the tool long before the technicians and our director of maintenance. Having them all around, we were able to help support and train kind of as we go. And I mentioned the user interface, the technicians, the younger technicians in particular, there was no training. They were so hungry for electronic tools to get away from the paper that I gave them, they each got a laptop and they went nuts with it and had it figured out. You know, I was very anxious. Again, my familiarity with ERP is that you spend months writing the manual. And so I was a little anxious because I didn't have that, but in the end, it didn't need it. It was so, the user interface was so intuitive for the technicians that they just figured it out. Within an hour or two, the first day, we're up and running.
Okay, that's interesting. And you bring up something else, too, I want to highlight is you got them the laptops, you got them the carts, the printers. We started calling it a digital toolbox here internally, but, one, why did you do that? And two, what was the impact of that? And was the impact what you expected?
Yeah. So I did it because that, to me, that was key to efficiency in organization. As you know, the challenge in the industry right now with finding qualified, AMPs and aircraft technicians. That's the biggest challenge I have in the organization right now is people. And because we have such a hard time with finding people, to me, I saw a way to help mitigate that was becoming more efficient. And again, airing a little bit of dirty laundry. Historically, when our technicians would have a list of squawks that was on a card, and they would list the squawk, and they'd go over to a mechanical time clock on the wall, and they would stick the card in, and it'd go ka-chunk, and they would clock in, and then they would go over, and they'd go ka-chunk and clock out on that squawk. And then at some point, that would get time card would get handed off to somebody else, and they would do the math and figure out how many hours for each squawk. And I saw that as an opportunity to gain some efficiency by removing that walking back and forth, removing the time needed to add up the times. It freed the technicians up to do value-added work on aircraft. And part of that was giving them an electronic tool where they could clock in and out of squawks and make notes of squawks without having to, you're removing the steps. Something so simple as walking back and forth across the shop. So having that electronic tool that is with them next to the aircraft was key to bringing out the efficiencies in the organization. And we tested a number of different pieces of hardware, phones, tablets, laptops, and it came to the conclusion that a laptop for our organization made the most sense. So now all of the technicians have a laptop and they can clock in and out. I've also given them access to technical publications that we have for maintaining aircraft. We have a room with microfiche, and occasionally they have to go in there and look things up on microfiche or pull binders off the wall. And again, it's historically what the organization has done and been comfortable with, and I've been getting them the electronic tools, getting them on their laptops. So now they don't have to walk into that room. They don't have to go through the file, find the microfiche and put it in the machine and hope the bulbs not burn out. And then one with the younger technicians, explain to them what microfiche is because they've never seen it before.
Yep.
So by giving them those tools electronically on their laptop, now they can pull up the manual or a parts list right there next to the aircraft, type in the part number into the parts module in the software, and the parts manager gets the note, and 5 minutes later, the part's next to them ready to be put on. So that's where the hardware was important for us in the rollout in order to get that efficiency.
Yeah, and I think the way you're looking at it, it's interesting the way you put it, because you know, we all talk about technician efficiency. I know everybody does, but I think there's some sort of perception around that it's like, hey, let's get these technicians to work faster on the actual maintenance. But the reality is it's looking at all of the, I don't want to call them nonsense, but the extra administrative tasks that surround the maintenance event that you look at and you go, hey, you're spending almost as much time doing this stuff as you are on the work. Could we use technology to actually pull that stuff out and allow you to spend more of your time focused on the actual work that you know you need to do?
Yeah, our technicians, look, they come into this industry because they love slugging wrenches.
Yeah.
And the more time I can give them to turn wrenches and fix things and be proud of that work, the happier they are. And ultimately, the things that they dislike doing, like going in and hunting through a paper catalog and trying to find it, removing that, giving them a tool. And the younger technicians, they're so comfortable with the technology anyway, they can find the answer so much faster electronically. So now they're spending less time and they're not frustrated by doing things they don't like doing, like looking that up, and they can spend the time doing the things they love doing, end up doing a more thorough job. Not that they don't do a thorough job now, they do, but they can focus more on, you know, making sure the aircraft is safe, making sure the inspections are great, delighting our customers with the extra touches on the physical airplane that they may have had some pressure in the past to, you know, something that, you know, wiping this grease off this spot of the plane, they might have not done it because they were under pressure because they didn't have the time. Now they have the time to go do those things and have even more pride in what they do. And when an airplane leaves the shop, they have big grins on their faces and go home in that night and say, boy, we did a great job today. And that customer's really happy, really thrilled.
See, I think you're missing a critical part. You know, every technician I talk to says, hey, I love sending an aircraft out, returning it to service, and then I love sitting down and doing 4 to 8 hours of paperwork and creating a logbook. So I don't know. You might be stealing some magic there. Yeah. I don't know. And it's a good point, especially for the younger technicians. It's, There's a lot of guys that are around my age that are starting to get into like assistant DOM, that kind of zone, you know, early DOMs at smaller shops. And, you know, I look at this generational gap and they say, you know, we don't have enough technicians in the industry. You know, for a while there was like, you know, not enough young people are coming in, but you also got to look at the flip side from somebody who's younger, that's dealt with technology all their life. They say, hey, I really love engineering, I love like the mechanical aspect, but I come into an A&P shop or I come into one of these places and they want me to do work like it's 1990 or something like that. What if I go to, is there another industry I can go to where I can just kind of do the work and I don't have to spend like 4 hours doing paperwork? And I think that this is unfortunately like a gap. You know, it just compounded and added to the problem.
You know, my personal vision, you know, I really got interested in aviation maintenance on a personal level because I'm an aircraft owner myself. My sister and her husband have owned several aircraft, and I've helped him with owner assisted annuals. And we all had a frustration with, you know, you take your car to the mechanic. Example, my wife takes her car to a mechanic and she drops it off in the morning. Mid-morning, she gets a text message, clicks the link. It has pictures of all the squawks. And she can say yes or no, right in the app. It's approved. In the afternoon, she gets a link. Your car's done. Here's a link for payment. She can pay it right there. And then in the evening, goes and picks the car up and is on her way. I'm like, why isn't it? We're dealing with something that has so much more risk. You know, in aviation, it has to be so much better. I mean, you get a flat tire on the road, you pull off the side of the road. You know, your engine quits in your car, you pull off the side of the road, call a tow truck. Your engine quits in an airplane, the end is very different. So why are we not able to bring that level of service, that level of technology, that level of, it's not the Bryce term, but professionalism. So our folks are very professional, but I think you know what I mean with the profession.
Yeah.
Bring that to aviation so we have that same level, that same thoroughness, that same, you know, to steal from Sam Adams' brewery, love, care, and attention to detail to take care of our customers so that they feel that love. And ultimately, that's good for us because then they come back. You know, and they trust us. And, you know, we have a great long-term sticky relationship with those customers because we're giving them that service. So that's where I think you mentioned the younger technicians. They go to an automotive shop and they have that. They come to an aircraft shop and they're like, wait, what's your point? Why are we 50 years behind? And so that's my personal desire, is to bring that so that our customers have that same experience like my wife has when she takes her car to the shop.
Yeah. And we'll talk offline about that. I need to pick your brain on some of those things, but we'll talk offline on that. So
aspirational. All right. That's my aspiration.
I think we've got similar aspirations. So, okay, cool. Basically to kind of summarize the approach, it was, hey, I'm coming in here. I'm looking at where the business is at. I'm looking at where the business is heading. I see where we want to get. I know that this is going to be a critical aspect of it. So now I need to start assessing, okay, kind of in parallel, what options are out there, and then what are our processes? You're talking with the team, you're following them around, you're seeing where we're doing things pretty manually, and then you pick a tool, you go in, you start the implementation process. You didn't take the rip the Band-Aid off approach this time. You did it step by step. You match the workflows so that way people have the visuals. You're building comfort, you're building team buy-in, and you got them the tools that they need. I'll call it the digital toolbox that they need to be able to effectively kind of carry out the vision that you guys had. So ultimately, now that you've put this stuff in place, I hate to say it, but like, so what? Like what's, yeah, why,
I'll give you the business reason first, which really resonates with our ownership group. Because our accounts, get the right metric, our days to payment. So sort of what we measure. It's kind of like an accounts receivable, but days to payment. So the number of days from when the job was done until we received payment went from 6 weeks to less than a week. So that was
really,
that was a huge influx in cash because our processes were so complicated, so much manual work, that adding up the times on all the squawks. You know, you have a big annual with 50 squawks. Somebody's got to sit down and do the math, and a technician might clock in and out of a squawk 3 or 4 times. So now you're looking at 200 times you have to manually do the math and add all those up. And you know, the parts, the same thing. It was, you know, individual, go line by line on the part, remove them from inventory, figure out what the pricing is, what our costs were, all those things. It took so much effort to just create an invoice that we were taking forever just to get invoices out the door. So we were having customers pick up the airplanes and leaving and flying around for a month before they ever got their bill. And within, you know, I'll say a month of signing the contract, we were invoicing, and that number came down, and we're now running less than a week from completion to payment. And I see there's even more room for us to get even better. But that was a huge influx of cash to the organization by getting those accounts receivable. You know, it's a month of accounts receivable, a month of revenue is now in our bank that we didn't have before. So that was huge.
Wow. So from that perspective, it was let's fix these operational efficiency pieces across the board. Basically, in this case, like starting with the flow from the technician on the work orders, the line items that can flow back to somebody that's doing parts, have all those things marked up. And then when it flows to the billing person, whoever's handling that, a lot of those manual calculations are done. And so the downstream impact is, okay, cash flow goes from waiting kind of an indefinite period of time to, influx of cash. All right.
Yeah, it was huge.
Interesting.
And that was, it was tricky because I was reporting out revenue to the ownership group. And I, you know, for 3 weeks, I had to temper it. So guys, this is misleading. This isn't what we're actually doing in the shop. This is us getting caught up on accounts receivable. And what
we implemented this and our dollars went up 10,000% a month. Yep.
It was,
I'm a genius.
Yeah, it was, but in the end of the day, it was really good because while it wasn't a sustainable bump in monthly revenue, it was a big influx of cash to the organization,
and it also sets up a future state too.
Yep, for sure. So that was from a business standpoint. You know, we're still gathering data to see how the software is impacting our efficiency. We don't have enough data. We didn't have data available before the implementation to know kind of hours available versus hours billed for our technicians. So I suspect that, you know, just from feel and looking at revenue, that's getting better, but I don't have hard data. But that's one of the impacts of the business, that we are becoming more efficient. You know, we're being able to bill for more hours that the technicians are on the payroll clock, so to speak.
And one other aspect of that too, and actually maybe let's set up a call after this. We'll talk after we stop recording, but maybe we could talk through that too and help you guys go in the right direction.
You know, I have the data now. I have today, you know, data from when we started with EBIS. It's just I don't have enough data yet to be able to say there's a trend.
Sure, and we have some customers that are doing that stuff. So even if it's something I could just share what other people are doing, happy to do that. But like one of the things that we hear from customers too is that part of measurement and then incentivization. Mm-hmm. So how are you looking at this as? Are you exploring this as a way for kind of like incentivizing employees based on efficiency and like how are you viewing this in relation to promotions and creating career paths for people? What's the vision there?
So we're probably 9 months or so away from being able to use the tool to do that. Again, I have good data. I don't have enough data to be able to put together an incentive plan. But, you know, in 9 months, I, you know, having essentially a year under our belt with the software, a year's worth of data, you know, my intent is that our technicians, our technician staff, I'd love to, granted, I don't have a plan built yet, but I would love to give them, you know, bonus them, incentivize them, pay them based on that hours worked versus hours available metric. You know,
yep.
give them a reason to, now that we have the data, which we didn't have before, this would allow me to do that. Say, guys, hey, if we can, you know, improve our hours worked to hours billed by, you know, 3%, you guys get 3%, you know, whatever the number is. So now they're incentivized to become even more efficient and bring forth ideas. Hey, here's an area where we can do better, and then implement those. So that's, software gives us that tool, and I'm excited about having the data to be able to do that. Other data that I'm very excited to have is we didn't have good data in the past about how much time we were working on our own 135 and flight school airplanes. That was just kind of absorbed into the maintenance organization. So it was artificially hurting the performance of the maintenance shop because we were essentially doing free maintenance. Mm. It was artificially inflating the performance of charter and flight school. And, you know, we put them together, the math still worked. Everything was still good, but I'm not comfortable that we have been making good decisions about where we put our resources because we didn't know how much money we were spending on our own charter and flight school aircraft. And, you know, that could very much influence the decisions we make on our fleet going forward, where we invest, where we don't invest, and then also our growth in maintenance. Do we grow focused on external customers, or do we grow the maintenance focused on internal charter and flight school customers? And, you know, we still don't have quite enough data just because it's time. You know, we're still young, but, you know, I suspect in another 3 to 6 months, we're going to have a huge, very rich data, and we're going to be making some very significant kind of shifts in our focus kind of strategically based on knowing where the money's coming from, where are we making money.
Yeah. And it's important to have that. Actually, it reminds me, I may link you up with another one of our customers that's actually going through that process of figuring out where the differences come between the 135 and the 145 side. Cause they almost had the reverse issue where it seemed like the in-house maintenance was like doing amazing, but they just needed to change up how they were addressing it based on the cost. So yeah. Okay, cool. I'll follow up with you on that. So where's the company heading now? What are you guys, what's the main services you guys are offering now, and then where's the company headed?
Yeah, so you know, primarily we're a 135 on-demand charter operator. We have a number of, well, I've got to count them up, 3 or 5 aircraft in the 135 charter. We also have a 140 Part 141 flight school, and so we do flight training as well, which has historically been a nice feeder to our charter operation. We also do air tours around the beautiful Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. So if you're ever up that way, or any listeners up that way, stop in and we can show you the beautiful mountains from the air. And then we have a 145 repair station, and we're a maintenance shop doing the maintenance on our 135 and flight school aircraft as well as customer aircraft. We're about 60-40 internal external customers, and we pride ourselves in being a premium piston single and twin maintenance facility. So we get a lot of customers who may have had a bad experience somewhere else. They can come, they'll come to us, and we have some extremely talented inspectors and technicians. In fact, we have to pull the reins a little bit on some of our inspectors, which is great. I would much rather do that than have an inspector not being thorough, but they're extremely thorough. And that's a value we bring to our customers, is that if they really want to know their airplane is fully inspected and really well maintained, that's our sort of our value proposition. and what we're selling out in the marketplace.
That's cool. You were telling me a story of, I'm not sure if it was the director of maintenance or who it was, but you had like a pilot that was troubleshooting an issue, and from inside the office in the hangar was like, hey, do X, Y, Z, pull this. You're going to notice this happens. And then once you do this, D, E, and F, let me know what the gauge says. And like 10 steps of troubleshooting from just talking on the phone. That was, it was a cool story.
I don't recall that specific story because it happens a lot.
Okay.
And our technicians, our director of maintenance and our technicians, they're wizards with the experience they have. And that's the, you know, a benefit to having those resources available for our customers that they can call and know they have somebody to call. They're not, you know, relying on some, a shop on the field with whom they have no relationship. Could be very good. It may not, but they know they can always call in and 9 times out of 10, have the troubleshooting done over the phone.
That's awesome. It's a great resource.
Yeah. And we're looking, you know, there are plans in the future with the 130, primarily we're 135, you know, on-demand charter, and we're growing that fleet. You know, we're looking to grow our current fleet. We have Piston Twins right now serving the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic and the Eastern Midwest. We're actively working to grow our fleet into turboprops. As we grow our fleet, we plan to grow our maintenance capabilities. So we'll use that fleet growth to spur growth within our maintenance facility and take on more turboprop maintenance and grow that capability, and then take on external customers and the turboprop maintenance as well. So, you know, it all comes down to people. As long as, you know, finding the good people is the hard part. So if there's any A&Ps or technicians that would like to be in the Pocono Mountain area, you know, reach out. But we're certainly that's where we're headed as an organization, is to grow that 135.
And I guess the last question on that, why do both the 135 and the 145?
Well, by having our own maintenance, you know, we're in charge of our own destiny. You know, we're not relying on anyone else to do the maintenance on our aircraft. We can manage our maintenance schedule on our charter aircraft so that to minimize downtime, we can, you know, the airplanes we have now, we're on an annual and 100-hour inspection programs, and we can, you know, we can run an airplane right down to the end of the 100 hours, right up to it, and get it right in the shop, turn it, get it back on the line. Where, you know, if we went to outside maintenance, we'd have to schedule that inspection out ahead of time, and either you're going to bring an airplane in that has lots of time left before it's due for its inspection, or that airplane's going to be sitting unusable until you can get it in inspection. So having both the maintenance facility and the 135 brings us some synergies that allow us to maximize the utilization of those aircraft. That's the best view.
That makes sense. So, and from the owner's perspective too, who brings the aircraft to you to be chartered, it's, mm-hmm. hey, we actually can get that window of opportunity, yep. as big as possible, but in terms of the downtime, we could get that as small as possible to that annual date or that 100 hours. That's, we can right. get that within, yep. you know, a couple, versus, hey, you're 50 hours out. We know there's a delay here. We got to schedule this. You might have 30 hours left. You might have 10. We really don't know. So now with this, you can actually get that window down, keep the utilization up, and
right.
it's more profitable for the, sure. okay.
Yeah, we can bring better service. You know, our internal customers are happy. Our internal customers are our dispatchers and schedulers. And we can delight them in a way that if they had to use external maintenance, they wouldn't be delighted the way
you're just kind of at the mercy.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Got it. Okay, cool. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to touch on?
No, I think, I'm a huge proponent of this particular software. There's a lot of softwares out there that are all great. They all have their niche. You know, I alluded to one that we've talked about it before that I think has a little bit more capability, but if the capability is there and you can't use it, then it's not a capability that's useful. So I think, you know, for every organization, there's something for you. This one, I think, fits us really well. And, you know, anyone who's evaluating upgrading their electronic tools, give this one a fair shake. I think there's a lot of good benefits, especially an organization like ours. It was great. But I see there's capabilities we're not even touching. So even for much bigger operations, there's value that you and I haven't even touched on here. That, you know, we're just not at a point in the growth of our company, the maturity of our company to utilize. But yeah, it's a great tool. And this is, for me, this is my short-term solution to the labor crunch in the marketplace. And
yeah,
it's been a big help.
Well, like you say, rising tide lifts all ships. So I'll do what I can to help on that front. And where can people find you and get connected?
Yeah, well, MoyerAviation.com, Access Air, and that's AXCESS Air, AccessAir.com. Those are, you can find us on the website. And we're, you know, again, based out of South Jersey Regional, Victor Alpha Yankee, and Mount Pocono Regional, and that's Mike Papa Oscar. And we have charters. We can, especially with our prop planes, we can get into smaller fields, get you to closer to your cabin in Vermont than anybody else, because we can land on short runways. That's our niche with the charter. But yeah, reach out to us for charter and for maintenance. We're happy to bring on new customers and maintenance, and also avionics. We had historically had a very strong avionics business, and we lost some staff, and we have just staffed that back up. So now we're actively doing some significant panel upgrades and aircraft as well. So if you're looking for a new panel, some new avionics, we can help you with that as well. And that's out of Mount Pocono Regional.
Nice. Well, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having us. Thanks for all your support.